Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Scream ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
And Ash.
You know what time it is. It's Slasher Deep Dive time.
But before we get into everything, we want to let you know that we each picked a slasher movie. We're not going to tell you, again, who picked them, but we each picked a slasher movie. Those movies are Rob Zombie's Halloween, Urban Legend, and Wrong Turn. We will discuss one of those in a full episode after this big old slasher discussion. Yeah, I already said that part.
You know what's weird about this whole thing is that my pick didn't even end up on the poll because I actually picked doing the slasher episode of Boy Meets World as my pick. And weirdly enough, it did not make it up there on Patreon.
She did.
I wonder why.
I think my text response was, that's what makes you special or something like that.
That is exactly
and I thought
it
was you agreeing with me to let me have it as my pick. And I got so excited. And then I saw the picks and I was like, none of mine are up there. So I'm confused.
Okay, to be fair.
Cinematic gold.
To be fair, one of yours was up there. Yeah. Not none.
No, but I changed my mind, so none of them are.
One of your picks.
So I'm not covering any movies next week. I'm whatever ends up getting voted on, if mine does get picked, I'm coming with notes for the Boy Meets World fucking slasher Halloween episode.
To be honest, that is a primo episode.
Epic.
Primo.
Completely valid. I was going to give it to you, but I was like, I think those are short, and I don't know how we're going to get an episode out of
I could do it.
Truth.
I could
you
do
got it.
It.
Okay.
Little bonus episode.
If Ash's pick does get picked, it might not happen.
It won't be
It
bad.
Might not even be picked. Just you don't know what you're going to get.
If it gets picked, it won't. That's all that matters.
So don't pick what you think mine is.
So you guys will vote on which movie you're most interested in hearing being discussed. Unless it's Ashes, then it won't be discussed. And in the beginning of the next episode, we will reveal who each movie belonged to. If that's something you want to get in on the ground floor on, go to patreon.com/screampodcast, place your vote, and help choose which slasher movie we discuss next. And also, before we move on, we also want to mention Adrian Tofay, which is the writer, director, actor in Be My Cat, a film for Anne, who we just had a really cool conversation with.
That was so much fun.
He was so nice.
He really was.
Like, I want him to be successful in everything he does.
Me too.
Fully agree.
I really do.
I would also, I want to clarify that I was not high because I look baked out of my face in the photo that you posted and I was not. So I just wanted to clarify for the people.
For the masses.
I was like, is that what my chill face looks like?
I thought you looked great.
I looked stony baloney'd.
Well, Adrian Tofay, he gave us a bunch of like behind the scenes information on his movie, Be My Cat. A bunch of you guys really loved Be My Cat. And, you know, we did the found footage episode a couple months ago. You guys were really into it. So we talked to him. He was great. He's a wonderful dude. And you can find that episode exclusively again on patreon.com/screampodcast. So with all that out of the way, I'm Elena.
I'm Caleb.
I guess that makes me Ash.
Elena, you messed it up.
No, that's why.
Now
I
she's
did
just
it.
Herself.
I'd like to be myself. I love
because
me and I don't love
Ash.
Anybody else.
There's only one Ash.
There is. That's true.
So, guys, we are doing another subgenre of horror deep dive. And today we are talking about slasher movies, probably one of the biggest genres in horror, probably one of the most known, probably one of the most exciting.
Hell yeah. I almost did that.
You should have. We've been doing that a lot today.
We have.
Sometimes we have days where like we do the same thing and like say the same thing and it's like kind of creepy. And then other times we do this thing where I'm like, I was going to say that. And then same. Just a look into our lives.
So before we get into the movies of the genre, let's talk about exactly what it is that makes a slasher movie so that we're all, you know, on the same page.
A killer.
That's it. Let's move on.
I'm participating.
That's it.
I'm moving on.
Next.
That covers it.
We've researched the history, we've gathered up the facts, and we've discovered what defines a genre. So, first question, what is a genre all about? I would say kills over story, body count, and a
yes.
final girl. All very essential parts of a slasher movie.
You need to have a final gal.
You gotta have it.
And there could be variations of that too. You know, you can have a final bow sometimes or, you know, something like that, but...
A final gal or a final pal.
Yes. Sometimes, you know, the emphasis is that we want the final girl, but, you know, sometimes people switch it up and that's okay too. You're probably still a slasher.
Yeah.
I feel like there's gotta be nudity.
I've come to realize that, like, a slasher doesn't need nudity, but, like, yes, that's a good one to toss in because I feel like nudity and like specifically boobs, like boobs kind of makes
just
a slasher
gonna say,
movie.
For sure.
You need boobs.
You need boobs or like a hint of boob.
Yeah, at least like a side boob.
Yeah, I feel like boobs in some way, shape, or form is like the seasoning of the movie. Like, you sure, you can have one without it, but like, is it really that good?
Yeah, like you could have a burger without Lowry's, but if you got Lowry's on it.
There you go.
Boobs are like Lowry's seasoning salt.
Oh. That's exactly what they are. I always say that.
Titties equals salt.
So who are the villains? Usually a human mass killer with their eyes set on murder, but in some cases the slasher can be inhuman, supernatural, sometimes even a force in some... We'll talk about that later and get into the specifics of that.
Final Destination-esque.
Yeah. We'll talk a little more about that and how we all feel about that because I do think... we'll get into that.
We'll go there.
What are the movie tropes? People who do sinful things. Die. That's what happens. They die.
Virgins don't.
Virgins usually do pretty well. So if you're doing drugs, if you're having sex, if you're wronging the killer or killers, you're probably going to die.
I think if like you're gay that you're not going to die.
I feel like I've seen gay people die.
Really?
It's like in Scream 4 when he tries to, at the last second, he's like, I'm gay. And then he's like, I don't know, did it work? And it didn't.
Oh, yeah, okay, you're
so
right.
So there
you're
you
right.
go.
That is fair. There is a scene in Aqua Teen Hunger Force where Shake and Meatwad started making out to avoid getting killed, so.
You said Meatwad?
Yes.
It's just like that.
So do these movies take place in a real world? Most of the time, I would say
they
yeah.
Sure do.
Like 90% of the time, they do. I mean, there are some exceptions, like, you know, Freddy Krueger, for example. But it still is pretty much a real world. It's more like he's not in the real world, but.
He just brings you into another world. The real world is still there to ground the movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but usually in the slasher movie, you're in the regular everyday world, and that's like the fun with it. You know, you're getting sliced up or like getting an axe thrown at you or something, but you're just like at like, you know, Denny's
summer
or something.
Camp.
Oh.
Denny's. Denny's or summer camp, they both apply.
And that's what makes slashers fun, is they're places that you are every day.
Yeah, Denny's. I'm at Denny's every day.
Exactly.
Catch me at Denny's.
Every day.
They could also happen at the Texas Roadhouse.
That's true. Shout out Ethan Hurt.
Texas Roadhouse Massacre.
Let's make a whole horror movie dedicated to that.
Yeah.
Texas Roadhouse Massacre.
Yeah.
Like, do you think we could get the licensing on that?
Yeah, I think we can do it. It wouldn't be an issue.
TM.
So who are some of the biggest directors of the genre? And this one is a little bit hard because there are so many slasher movies in the world. There's so many one-off movies. But I think to pick this, I kind of pick like some of the people who I feel like have made some of the most and some of the most quality slashers. And I feel like
Wes
is up there, as well as Alfred Hitchcock and John Carpenter.
Yeah. For sure. Would you throw Dario Argento in there?
I would in a way, but I mean, he makes giallo movies, so it's more like Italian. Like,
so
they are very slasher-esque and like they have a ton of elements of slasher in them, but they're more like artful, kind of like a lot of times like supernatural, like kind of psychology, like thrillery based movies. So
It's like a subgenre of the genre.
Pretty much. I mean, that's a whole other conversation, too. We can get into subgenres of slashers, which is just...
Which we will. Eventually.
We could also give honorable mentions to people like Tobe Hooper, but again, I wouldn't call him like one of or the most prolific like slasher-specific director because frankly, he hasn't made enough good ones to cement himself, even though he did create my favorite slasher movie of all time. Or, I mean, Texas Chainsaw is a little bit less slashery than some other slashers, but I still feel like at heart, it's a slasher. I'm calling it.
I agree.
John, Wes, Alfred Hitchcock, they've all put out numbers. They've all put out really good films. And I mean, John himself, I mean, he's wrote so many movies just on his own.
Well, and Alfred Hitchcock, like, started a lot of the tropes that are in slasher movies. Like the killing off the lead lady, like, pretty early in the movie. And something Wes took in Scream.
Yeah, everything could for sure be traced back to Alfred Hitchcock.
Hitchcockian.
And then we get to know, like, notable actors in the... slasher or horror genre in general. Pretty much, I mean, they are cemented in the horror genre, but they are kings and queens of the slasher movie. We have like Jamie Lee Curtis, Neve Campbell, yes. Robert Englund, Bill yes. Moseley, Warwick Davis, Kane Hodder, Felissa Rose, Gunnar Hansen, David Arquette, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and Brad Dourif, to name a few.
Just a few.
Yeah. And Jennifer Love Hewitt.
I wouldn't say she's one of the biggest.
What are you waiting
for? No, I mean...
I just wanted Elena to say, what are you waiting for? I needed it. And I knew as soon as I said that you were going to do it.
You knew it.
And something a lot of the movies have in common is that the entire genre revolves around what we previously mentioned. It's kills. Slashes are filled with kills no matter how ridiculous, how absurd. If the purpose isn't to murder a high number of people, I probably wouldn't call it a slasher movie. Plus, campiness is a huge trope. Jump scares.
Oh, yeah.
Revenge-like motive for killing. And boobs.
And shower scenes. Nakedness.
Adjacent to boobs.
Yeah, naked and boobs go hand in boob.
What we've learned so far, naked, salt, boobs. Do with that what you will. Naked, seasoned boobs.
Ah, yes, yes. Roasted on a barb.
Ouch.
Roasted on a hot barb.
Ouch. I just heard like a titty sizzle.
Lod.
So usually a big draw to slasher movies is that the plot isn't moving along in order to give you a good story. It's moving to give you a good setup for the next kill. So it's basically like person says something absurd, they break a rule, they wander off, they get killed in an absurd way. That's pretty much the golden formula for a really good slasher movie. And that's what makes a horror movie a slasher movie. And now that we should all be on the same page, before we get into the many slasher movies that are out there and the many subgenres of this subgenre, we can discuss the origins of the slasher.
Let's do it.
Okay.
So while looking into slasher movies, I was actually kind of surprised because I always knew that Psycho was pretty much the first slasher, but it seems like every time you go and look into the origins of something, you find out that there's something that came before it. You know, it's always like, oh, this is assumed to be the first, but this is actually the first. In this case, Psycho pretty much was the first. I mean, there is one other thing we're going to get to in a second, but... by all means, Psycho is the first slasher. And I mean, even though it doesn't fit the exact layout of what a slasher is today, because I mean, there are absurdly high body counts, which really I feel like is the main thing that doesn't make it insane. I feel like it is a little more psychological than like, you know, some other movies, but everything goes back to it.
And it was the first one that put like all the like, you know, the shower scene. So it was like sexy. And it was like the first one to do that.
And a toilet.
Killing off the leading lady. I could not believe, I read that too, that it was the first time a toilet had been shown.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like wild and crazy.
That's
like,
so funny.
Look at this toilet we have.
Yeah, the association wasn't big on toilets before. They didn't like showing toilets.
It was the first time a toilet had been flushed.
I think it was the first time a toilet was like fully shown, to my knowledge, because like toilets kind of had been shown before, but like this was the focal point of the shot and it was like, here's a fucking toilet.
This is when toilets really had their moment. I mean, they were before, they had cameos before, but like this is
more
amazing.
People got them. Indoor plumbing went fucking crazy after this.
Yeah, toilets went viral after this. Like everyone had one.
It was the toilet's viral moment.
They had a sound on TikTok and everything.
Another thing I want to reference in regards to the origin of slasher movies is that there are many movies that led to the slasher being created, because obviously horror is a huge part of it. But another big part of the slasher movie is kills. Like, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but you need fucking kills, dude.
You need it, man.
And large body counts can be traced back to the likes of none other than Agatha Christie. And specifically,
oh, yeah.
And Then There Were None.
We love an Agatha Christie moment. I don't think she gets enough cred.
I also love an Agatha Crispy moment.
That's right.
I really hate the name Agatha.
Agatha.
I know a lady who named her baby that like pretty recently.
Why? Recently.
It makes sense for someone who writes mystery novels, for sure.
It makes, yeah. Yeah, for someone born in like the 1910s or something. Like,
for sure.
Back in the 10s.
Yeah.
So if you're not familiar, And Then There Were None is basically a giant game of Clue with a bunch of knucklehead killers running around a house attempting to find out which killer is going to kill them in the near future.
Amazing.
I love that idea.
It's pretty hilarious. There's a lot of Three Stooges-esque characters in there. I feel like everyone is one of the Three Stooges, but there's like 10 of them.
The 10 Stooges.
But seriously, watch Clue and then There Were None back to back. And not only will you have a great time, but you will feel all the parallels. And you kind of just feel like you watch the same movie. Maybe don't watch them at the same time. I take that back. Watch them at different times.
You know what? Don't do that. Don't heed my advice.
And we can even go back to 1932 and take a look at the film 13 Women, which revolves around a sorority and a man who seeks revenge and crosses them out in a yearbook. Very Mean Girls, but also very Valentine and very Prom Night.
Oh, I was just going to say that.
Very much. And you know what? Whenever you have a sorority, we're in for a slasher. I'm here.
Let's go, Scream 2.
Omega Beta Zeta.
This is Cece.
So now, without further ado, the introduction to slasher movies. Psycho, 1960. Everyone knows Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. It stars Jamie Lee Curtis's mother, Janet Leigh, as Marion Crane, who, by the way, in the future would be played by Anne Heche in the 1998 remake with Vince Vaughn and fucking Rihanna in the Bates Motel TV remake. Which, honestly, just seeing Rihanna as Marion Crane, I mean, I know that's such a side note, but, like, thank the Lord.
Caught a vibe.
Caught a vibe.
Oh, Riri looks so good.
Psycho also stars Anthony Perkins as Norman Bates, a name that lives in horror infamy, and Hitchcock's Psycho introduced a seemingly normal character who, unbeknownst to everyone around him, murdered his mother and took on the role of his mother in a very, like, multiple personality type of situation.
Well, and I think he was one of the first ones, too, because before this, wasn't that usually that the killer was, like, some really ugly, like, kind of gross person, and this was the first time they used someone like Anthony Perkins is like
he's a good looking
kind
guy.
Of adorable in like a nerdy way, and so I think this was the first time where you were just like, oh, okay. He's not that bad.
It's also weird because he looks like he's like 25 when he's like 55. Like, I feel like that dude never aged a day in his life.
No,
that's goals.
He really didn't.
And the movie went insane in popularity and notoriety, and people weren't drawn to the story. They were drawn to the kill scene, which is kind of insane. Like, could you imagine flocking to a theater to see like just a like basic ass little knife kill and then going insane? Like, it was different times,
and it was like hysteria at this scene.
They also like wouldn't let people into the movie theater late because he didn't want anything to get ruined.
Psycho was also really interesting too, because the way Hitchcock promoted all of this is that he didn't show anything from the movie originally. Like, his original trailer was just him talking about the movie.
I kind of love that.
I kind of wish trailers still did that, you know?
I was just going to say that, actually, because I feel like a lot of times, like, some movies will do, like, the trailer just is the whole movie, and then you go see it, and you're like, oh, okay, like, I already saw that.
Yeah, it leaves a lot of room for disappointment, where I feel like when you just explain a movie, it's like, okay, I got something in my head, let's go check this out.
And that scene, too, the scoring over that scene, that, like, high-pitched, like, like that, like, every time it stabs. He apparently, Hitchcock wanted it to be silent during that scene. He didn't want any music over it.
Yeah.
And then when they put that in, and it's weird because now that particular kind of scoring is like what they use a lot. Like, they use that now. That kind of like,
and just think of like how famous that is. Like, I think we literally did it.
We literally did.
Episode.
Yeah,
I love it, but I'm starting to like wish it didn't exist because I put it as like one of my my alarm ringtones, so now it like wakes me up all the time, so now it just pisses me off. I'm like completely over it.
So now it's triggering.
You can never set a song you like as your ringtone to wake you up in the morning. I've made that mistake.
Yeah, no, it's terrible.
Like, so now I wish it didn't exist.
Yeah, basically.
I wish he never did that.
So from Psycho came splatter movies. It also helped the more mainstream launch of Italian giallo movies, which we mentioned a little while ago, which mix slasher horror elements with artful direction, vivid colors, and sometimes even the supernatural. And we can't forget the boom in exploitation movies that followed in the early 70s.
Ah, yes.
Might not have Basket Case without Psycho.
I was literally thinking of Basket Case.
I haven't seen Basket Case.
You'd probably hate it.
You would hate it.
All right, noted. Not going to watch that.
That'll be my next pick.
Oh, great. Belial. Everybody, don't let that happen.
I saw that so young.
Is it scary?
I mean, if you see it young, I'm sure.
It was scary to me when I was young, but I was scared of Belial just like coming out of the wall somewhere.
Out of the wall. Like he's a ghost.
Ha, I'm Belial.
I would love to see like a sequel to Basket Case where Belial's just a ghost.
Where he's a ghost. And he just like phases through walls.
I'm lolling like I even know what's happening. I'm like, I know, guys. That'd be so funny. Belial. Such a character.
So we can go on for hours about the things that the slasher genre created and inspired, but I think it would be much more exciting to go through a timeline of slashers and discuss the change in the genre over the past 60 plus years. And I do want to note, too, that we're not going to be able to get through everything in this episode because the slasher genre is fucking huge. There are so many movies. If we want to get through like everything thoroughly, I think it's going to take a 25 episodes, maybe.
Yeah, we're definitely going to revisit. I think a lot of the genres are going to end up having a revisit after the first initial.
Yeah, I think
dive.
A good amount of them will. Slasher is one that definitely will. Like, I mean,
for sure.
If I think about the first one we did, though, the found footage, I'm like, we really don't need much else for that
no,
one.
No, that
like,
one I think we're good.
Like some genres are kind of easy, but slasher yeah. is just so big and there's
so
much.
Many.
It's so all encompassing. And I would love to get like deeper into the certain offshoots of slasher.
And in the modern world, like with Mockbusters and everything else we have going now, like there's just so many worlds of the slasher we could go into.
Oh,
it'd
yeah.
just take fucking
for sure.
forever. So
yeah.
So we'll see you there.
Yeah, we'll see you there. And just know, you're not going to hear everything today, but I think you'll probably learn a good amount of stuff.
And we'll get to it.
But without stalling any longer, let's go back to the 1960s. But not with Psycho. Let's talk about Peeping Tom, also from 1960.
Oh, so I got like a couple notes on this, and I thought I was going to be the only one that got them. And I'm so mad that I wasn't. I was like, ooh, I'm going to tell them that Psycho wasn't the first one. I'm going to get them.
So Peeping Tom... I mean, I'm sorry to steal from you, Ash. I should have known. I mean, to be fair.
Yeah.
You should have known.
You should have known that I would be prepared.
But Peeping Tom released only a few months before Psycho on April 7th of 1960, which could be the only valid argument against Psycho being or not being the first slasher. You know, this is really the only thing that gives it a run for its money.
Yeah, it's really just a timeline thing.
Yeah, but also it does have a lot of psychological thriller elements, which, I mean, I did just say that about Psycho a second ago, but I do feel like Psycho does have a little more of the slasher feel to it than Peeping Tom does.
From the sounds of it, yeah, because I haven't seen Peeping Tom.
I did watch it a couple days ago in preparation
for this. Did
you
like it?
I thought it was a really good movie. Like, honestly, it's a great movie, and it's pretty disappointing that it got snubbed. Like, people fucking hated it when it came out. It got no attention.
Yeah, they didn't like it at all.
It was the time, man.
Did you just send a picture of Belial to the... Oh, okay, nice.
I did. I sure did.
Okay, because I want to tell you, I was going to make a joke, because immediately when you showed it to me, I was just going to sing that Air song that's like, sexy boy. And then I couldn't stop singing that in my head.
That's amazing.
So what Peeping Tom did have is that it was the first movie to put the audience in the killer's POV, which is something that a lot of slashers do. It is, like, I think one of my favorite parts of slashers, too, which is a really cool thing. And it's referenced in Scream 4, not the killer POV, but Peeping Tom.
Oh, I love
that.
Oh,
is it really? I didn't catch that.
It is. They mention it as, like, oh, but did you know that Psycho wasn't the first slasher? It was this movie, Peeping Tom. But I do feel like that is one of the lines in Scream where they kind of take some liberties to throw people off, you know, to, like, break the rules. Because I'm like,
right.
I do think there is a valid argument as to whether or not it is the first slasher. And I would love to hear people's opinions, too. If you guys want to like comment about it, let us know. I would love to hear
things. Well, people say now that it's like one of the finest films of all time.
I think it's a really good movie. Like, it is a
really
good movie through and through. When you're watching it, I mean, it doesn't feel like something that clever could be in like 1960. It's really good.
Yeah, from what I was reading, like, and because you've seen it, I'll ask you, is the whole premise basically like the guy carries around the camera and he like wants to get the victim's expression.
Pretty much, yeah. That's how the movie intros, and then the rest of it is him kind of like taking pictures at like kind of like soft core porn kind of shoot things, and then he's just
soft core.
Yeah, I know, that was insane.
We do love corn.
I was like, corn, endless corn,
gotcha.
Endless soft core corn.
That was something else.
But that's also like it's like in Scream 4 how the killers are trying to get the expressions on the victims.
Yeah.
So on this note, what do you think the first slasher was? Was it Peeping Tom for being the first movie featuring a mild-mannered killer? Was it Psycho and its iconic stabbing scene? Was it Tobe Hooper's Texas Chainsaw Massacre? Because, I mean, we could say that maybe Psycho isn't exactly a full slasher that we see today? Or was it Black Christmas for fully solidifying what we recognize as a slasher today?
Fun fact, Elvis Presley said that Black Christmas was one of his favorite movies.
Huh, okay.
And so did Steve Martin.
That's amazing.
So I'm gonna go with the king. No, I'm just kidding.
No, that's true. I mean, Elvis had like 20 pounds of shit in him or something when he died. So, I mean, I'll believe anything he says.
That's wild. He also died on the can, so he should have gotten rid of that first. I feel like I'd have to say Psycho because...
I say Peeping Tom.
Do you?
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I haven't. I've only seen bits and pieces of it, but it to me, it's like it's got what I need.
From the sounds of it, to me, it sounded more psychological than it did like a slasher. But I would have to see it.
Psycho, to me, is more psychological than a slasher.
Okay.
I think they both are, but I personally think Psycho has a little bit more. But honestly, like when I really like think about what I see slashers as, like every time I watch a slasher, you know, they all have this very specific formula. And it's not the formula that you get in Psycho. So I almost want to be that opposition and say, you know what? It was Black Christmas.
Oh, shit.
But I think you're right that Black Christmas definitely has, like, the formula that I think we're all used to seeing in a slasher more recognizably.
Was Black Christmas 70s?
Yeah, it was 74. 4 years before Halloween. So it was before, like, Halloween pretty much... We'll get into it in a second, but, you know, it restarted the craze, but Black Christmas kind of was the one that came out before. It was recognized as a really good movie, and I mean, it has pretty much all of the setup. Like, it has some crazy dude stalking you. You get his POV a lot of the times. You get, like, some crazy score. You get, like, weird, absurd kills and, like, antics and stuff. High body count. You have absurd characters just doing ridiculous things the whole time. I think Black Christmas, like, is definitely more of a slasher than Psycho is. I don't know. I still want to say Psycho is the first one. But I can see the argument for Black Christmas being the first.
Yeah, I can too.
Huh.
Elena, you might also remember a 1972 flick called Silent Night, Bloody Night. Or you might not remember it because, frankly, we barely paid attention. We kind of just made our own narrative to the whole thing.
That was one of the funniest things I have ever watched in my entire life. And I think our narrative was way better.
I think we made the movie way better than it was initially.
I think we did.
I love that.
It was a truly wild journey.
But that movie's also a little interesting because it released in 1972, and it is, by all means, a slasher movie. So I'm like, I don't know.
Sure,
that also kind of comes before Black Christmas.
Yeah, it's in there.
Back to 1974, we just brought it up, but Black Christmas, it's a really incredible, terrifying slasher. It has just enough comedy to tie it all together, and it released only a couple months after the Texas Chainsaw Massacre on December 20th of 1974. And I will say, I just really respect when a holiday movie actually releases around a holiday.
I know, I agree with that.
I love that.
I hate it when, like, a Christmas movie releases in, like, March. I'm like, what?
I don't want to watch that right now.
No. I want nothing to do with it. I loved that Hocus Pocus came out. Didn't Hocus Pocus come out, like, near... Was it Christmas?
I think so.
It was, right?
I think it was something like that. I remember us saying, like, it didn't come out around Halloween, right? Like, that was
like a total off-season.
Yeah.
See, that's fine. A Halloween movie release any time of the year.
Exactly.
We all just want Halloween back.
But Christmas, I'm like, all right.
Because it's a feeling. Like, Christmas is, well, so is Halloween. But, well, Halloween's like a lifestyle. Christmas is like a feeling.
Exactly.
So something you guys might not know about Black Christmas is that it was directed by Bob Clark. Anyone know who Bob Clark is?
I feel like that sounds familiar. And I feel like that's like, is he not a horror person?
No. This is actually really, after he did Black Christmas, he did not want to do any other horror movie. John Carpenter even asked him if he was going to do a sequel, and he was like, no, I don't want to do horror. Can you take a guess as to what other movies he would make?
I feel like his name sounds so
familiar. I know,
so
I was
familiar.
Just going to say, I feel like I'm going to want to kick myself.
Okay, go ahead and tell us.
Porky's. Porky's okay. 2.
Oh.
And A Christmas Story.
Shut
I know exactly.
Your face.
Now I do want to kick myself.
I love that he was like, yeah,
so
I'm
he really
go
stayed
off.
True.
He stayed true to the Christmas thing.
He did. He stayed true to the Christmas spirit.
A Christmas
spirit.
Story is it does have horror elements, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah, and it's one of the greatest Christmas movies of all time, and I think it's great that Bob Clark not only made one of the greatest just all-around Christmas movies of all time, but the greatest, like, Christmas horror movie of all time, too.
Yeah, he hit it all.
He's a multifaceted kind of guy.
He might be Santa.
Maybe he is.
Who knows?
We don't know.
I've never seen them in the same room.
Black Christmas, it might be one of the most slashery slashers ever. And I mean, like, to this day, not just in the sense of, like, one of the first that's ever come out. I think it's one of the best. I'm going to go ahead and say that I like it more than Halloween.
Wow.
Yeah, if I put this right next to Halloween, I will watch Black Christmas 100 times over before I, like, watch Halloween once. Because it is a great movie. No hate to Halloween at all. I love Halloween. But it is a great movie. It's just filled with like unnerving calls. There's this weird killer who's just saying disgusting things like, "Let me lick your pretty piggy cunt," to people, which is always, always going to put you in a weird mood. And it stars the Amityville Horror's Margot Kidder.
Oh, I forgot that she was in that.
And a very young Olivia Hussey and John Saxon.
Stacked. That cast is.
Miss Mac is a fucking drunk, hides her alcohol inside of toilets. Kind of drunk. That's the kind of drunk she is. She doesn't even that need to. Drunk. She's an adult.
Toilets go viral again.
Look at that. I think that's part of what makes a slasher.
Toilets.
Toilets.
Sitting on a toilet.
And she doesn't do a single task without a cigarette hanging out of her mouth. Barb is also a drunk. Olivia Hussey's boyfriend is a shit piano player who thinks he has a say on what women do with her body. But Olivia's Gross. Character, Jess, is a badass and beats him up with pure wit and intellect every time he says some dumb shit. It's just an all-around good movie, and it was remade in 2006 and 2009.
I saw it in theaters in 2006 when it came out.
Oh, shit.
Again.
Wasn't that great, was it?
No, wasn't that great.
Disappointing, waste of money.
Was not that great. Remember it vividly.
Hated it.
Wasn't the worst, but it wasn't that great.
Fun time, though.
It was a fun time. It was like, whatever.
So the next big moment in the genre is, of course, Halloween. But that isn't to say that there weren't any incredible movies released in between. Because before we hit 1978, I'd like to give some honorable mentions to Alice, Sweet Alice from 1976, Wes Craven's The Hills Have Eyes from 1977. And then, let's go into Halloween. I think it's about that time.
Let's take a trip.
Do you guys know that I watched Halloween for the first time? Not last Halloween, but the Halloween before.
I thought that was last Halloween. Was that? Wow, was it that long ago?
Yeah, it was the one before. Yeah.
It's wild.
It was a lot of fun. I was like, I really like this.
Ash hated it.
I really like this.
No, I loved it. I thought it was great. Kyle Richards is in it. I mean, come on.
It's just got such good vibes.
It does. Man. It's fun. And I watched it. I was going to say, and I watched it around Halloween, but I just said that.
Well, 1978 specifically to 1984 is known as the Golden Era. And this is kind of like, up for debate. Some people say the Golden Era spans a little bit farther than 84. Some people say it goes to like 86 or like around like 88 or something like that. But 78 to 84 right now. And then we'll get into a little bit of other stuff.
We're going to go right to the year before my birth.
Ah, there we go.
Which sounds horrible.
We're going way back.
85.
So John Carpenter took the horror world by storm with his film Halloween. Donald Pleasence as Dr. Loomis, Nick Castle as The Shape, and of course Jamie Lee Curtis and PJ Souls as Laurie Strode's best friend.
I like that movie a lot. Why did you think that I would hate it?
Oh, I was just kidding.
Oh.
A lot of stir.
Usually you're right about movies I like and dislike, so I was like, wait, what about it made you think I would hate it?
I feel like you're going to like Rob Zombie's Halloween more for some weird reason in hell.
I think really? You will like it.
I think like everyone's going to be pissed about you liking it, but I think you're going to like it.
I think you will too.
Okay, I'll let you know if I like it more or if I like it. Maybe I'll like it in a different way.
I need to watch it again because I watched it in theaters when it came out. And that's the only time I've seen it.
Wow.
And,
I remember not being like super obsessed with it when I left. So I'm hoping that feeling doesn't stay. I want to watch it again.
Shoutouts to Hitchcock can be found, such as Tommy Doyle being named after a character in Hitchcock's Rear Window, and Dr. Loomis being named after Sam Loomis, a.k.a. Marion Crane's boyfriend in Psycho.
I love when movies do that. The most recent Scream did that.
And Scream 2 did that.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Loomis.
Oh, and Scream 1, Billy Loomis.
Billy Loomis.
Just name all the Loomises and it's all shout out.
Just the whole Loomis family.
And we already mentioned earlier, but I mean, it's also kind of like a weird kind of shout out that they just cast Janet Leigh's daughter in Halloween as like the first revival to slashers after the first slasher was made.
The next final girl.
Halloween, originally titled The Babysitter Murders, made over $70 million on a $300,000 budget and had studios shook. I mean, what was this indie film that made millions? How can we exploit it? That was in the minds of every single Hollywood person.
I'm glad that by exploiting it, they changed the name.
I was just going to say, can you imagine if it was called The Babysitter Murders?
No, because there couldn't be more than one of those. Like, there could, but, like, you wouldn't be excited about it.
You're only excited about one babysitter murder.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You can only get excited once about The Babysitter Murders. And it's, like, The Babysitter Murders Sissa for the second one.
Sissa?
No, Sissa. Yeah. I like it.
And then for the third, The Babysitter Murders Sissa.
And it wasn't always babysitters getting murdered, so it just wouldn't have.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like just only a few get murdered.
There's like one babysitter. Grow up.
Like, grow up.
It actually is only one.
It's like a fucking handful of babysitters, okay? Get out of here.
You can just find another one.
Also, are we even going to call Jamie Lee's best friend or Lori's best friend a babysitter? She was not watching that child in any way, shape, or form.
No.
She was not. Call the babysitters club.
I mean, are you really hiring a babysitter to watch your kid? What do you think they're doing? Of course they're not watching your kid.
I can tell you 100%, unless it's like the kids in my family, I wasn't really paying that much attention to the other ones.
What, do you expect me to remember their name next?
Yeah, seriously.
Those other ones.
Well, just like Hollywood does, they squeezed every little bit of juice out of this slasher craze that they possibly could. After 1978's Halloween, the coming years were riddled with slasher movies, most of them pretty incredible. 1979 gave us When a Stranger Calls, which has one of the most terrifying intros of all time. But also,
it's such a good premise.
I saw that movie when I was like so young, and I've never seen it again because I'm still scared to watch it.
You saw the remake, right?
Yeah, yep.
It's a very good premise. It has a very good intro, but God, that movie has the worst audio quality of any movie I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, it is painful to watch that thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's bad, but like, it's still a pretty decent thing. The rest of the movie, honestly, is kind of boring. Like, I don't get the interest in it at all, but the intro, top tier, like 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
When was really that movie released originally?
1979.
It's interesting that the audio is so bad.
Oh, it's fucking terrible. It sounds like they recorded it through like a tin can. It is such a piece of shit.
Maybe they did.
I was just gonna say, maybe they did.
I think they did. You know, and like you like just put some strings in between some cans. They did that.
Yeah. To call your neighbor.
And my personal favorite, Tourist Trap, which is basically Dolls meets Maniac meets Texas Chainsaw meets House of Wax, plus it stars a very young Tanya Roberts, aka Midge from That 70s Show.
Oh my God, shit. I've seen parts of that. Like, you just, like, brought forth many memories.
A core memory.
Such a fun movie. And also, rest in peace to Tanya Roberts, because she died just a couple years ago, and very sad.
Sad. Aww. Rest in peace.
Yeah, tragic. She died from a UTI, too.
Are you serious?
Oh, my God, that's horrible.
That must have been agonizing.
She had, like, an untreated UTI, like, during coronavirus and died.
Oh.
Oh.
UTIs are, like, literally the most painful thing on the planet.
So rest in peace, Tanya Roberts. Cool chick. Love you, Midge. You're going to live on forever.
Oh, what a way to go.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And then don't forget, The Amityville Horror was also released in 1979. And guys, I don't know if you know, but they just announced the 50th Amityville recently. And also, I didn't know it was the 50th. I was making jokes about Amityville in Space, which is not exactly the next movie releasing. There's like 8 releasing right now, but it is one of them releasing in 2022, I believe they said. And it's also by the Polonia brothers who made like Peter Rottentail and shit. That's just insane to me. They've already made like 5 of these things. They gotta stop. They need to be stopped.
Have you ever seen one of the Amityville horror movies?
No.
Do you know what it's about?
Have you ever watched one of them?
So.
And like done a podcast about it?
I'd like to.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
You have goals.
Do you have any feelings about the Amityville horror series?
I feel that I'm so happy that this Amityville in Space ended up being the 50th in the franchise, because I have a Letterboxd list and it has all the Amityvilles on it, and I went to go add this one and I'm like, all right, Amityville in Space, let's add it on. And I was like, I was just joking about it before I went and checked the facts. I was like, I swear to God, if this is the 50th, that is the most like iconic thing ever. You take 50 movies to go to space. Incredible. Incredible.
I love it.
And then I look at it, it's the 50th fucking movie.
Wow. They should have asked you to be on it.
The cover is outrageous.
I gotta Google it.
It's a great cover.
It is beautiful. The trailer is something else, too. I mean, it's like,
I'm in.
If I know anything about the Polonia brothers, and specifically Mark Polonia, is that everything he makes is a giant piece of shit. So, like, I can't wait for this. It's gonna be, like, the most exciting thing I've watched in a while. It's gonna be so fun. Like, Peter Rottentail is, like, one of the worst experiences of my life.
That sounds like the worst experience of my life.
It's fucking terrible, but it has good parts.
Oh, my God. The fucking cover.
It's so good.
Why does the house have roots?
I don't know. Why does it have a face? There's a lot of questions.
Yeah, well, that was my next question.
Why is it
like, a human, but in space? Like, I don't get why the house going to space makes it a being.
It's so good.
Well, whose spaceship is parked out back?
I'm going to see it.
None of it makes any sense.
Is it going to like be in theaters, or is it
a joke? I highly doubt it.
Imagine if it was.
There is a small chance, and if it is, we'll all go. But like, I highly doubt
it. We are going to see it if it's in theaters.
Mark Polonia, can you get us to like one of the screenings or something? Figure it out. If there isn't a screening, please. Make a screening.
Figure it out.
People really be loving an Amityville movie.
They don't.
It's like, guys, pick. No, they don't. But like, loving to do one. Not loving to watch.
That's the weirdest thing about Amityville movies. Like, who, it's been done. Who are you making them for? Just me?
Yourself. You. That, you know that just kid that Caleb. Does podcasts about Amityville? Let's make him another one.
That's what they're saying. They're like, hey, let's make this guy another movie. Like, they're not.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why it's in space.
They're just thinking about
you. You are the public.
Oh, God. So much respect. Anyway, back to slasher movies. 1980 cemented Jamie Lee as a scream queen when Prom Night, Terror Train, and The Fog all released in the same year, which shows you just how fucking hard this woman was working.
She was killing it.
The same year.
I wonder how she felt about the Prom Night remake.
I wonder how she felt about the original.
Really? I've never seen the original. I've only seen the remake with, is it Brittany Snow?
Is I think it? So, honestly, yeah.
I think it is.
I haven't seen the remake. I've only seen the original.
I haven't seen the remake.
I remember watching that movie when I was like probably like maybe like 12 or 13. And I was like, this movie is so good. Do you guys even like horror movies? Do you guys want to watch this? It's so scary.
You just sounded like, what's her name from Big Mouth?
fucking Lola.
Lola.
What's crazy, too, is that, like, speaking of what we were talking about a second ago, that's what I used to tell people about Amityville back in the day. I was like, have you seen this Amityville horror shit? And then I remember rewatching it when I'm older. I'm like, what the fuck was wrong with me? This is the biggest piece of shit.
Do you even horror, bro?
Do you even horror? Have you seen the Amityville horrors? And I remember, like, being young, too, and I knew it was, like, a couple of them, because I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this one was scary, and this was kind of scary. And I was like, it must have been one of these, too. Little did I know there was already like 13 out at that time, and it could have been any of them.
A whole world opened up to you.
I can't.
So 1980 also brought films like Maniac, which stars Joe Spinell in his most disgusting, grunting, moaning, groaning, and crying as humanly possible form.
Awesome. Sad movie.
Like, I mean, I could say all those things, or I could just say it's as Joe Spinell as Joe Spinell could be. Like,
it certainly is. And then they remade it with Elijah Wood.
They did, which is just like, when you look at Joe Spinell and then you look at Elijah Wood, you have a few questions for the casting director.
Some differences.
Like, it's a different take on the movie for sure. It's not like a shot-for-shot remake or anything like that. Like, it's not 1998 Psycho with Vince Vaughn and Anne Heche's butthole. But, like...
The butthole. Is it credited?
Dude, her asshole should definitely be credited for that role. Like...
In that case, Sherry Moon's butt cheek should be credited.
You mean her ass crack, the line in between her ass?
Always and forever.
Look, I would have way more respect for Rob Zombie movies if he credited fucking Sherry Moon Zombie's ass crack.
He should. Does work.
But in Maniac, he
puts in work.
So in Maniac, Joe Spinell tricks and kills women. He removes their scalps with their hair and all the stuff and affixes them to the top of mannequins as trophies. It's also a love story. And again,
is it?
Not
sure
to be.
Is.
It is a love story. He tries to find love.
He does.
Does he find it? Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
He finds it in a hopeless place.
Yeah. Like a rock in a hard place.
Everything exactly. Does lead back to Riri.
It does.
And we also receive New Year's Evil, which is kind of a fuck show. I'm not even going to say it's like the greatest movie ever, but it does kind of have a special place in my heart because I watch it every New Year's. Because I'm like, I guess what other fucking New Year's horror movie am I going to watch?
I've actually never seen that one.
I can't think of another New Year's horror movie.
It just has this guy walking around. He's like, he says he's killing people at like midnight. Everywhere, but like he's going to different time zones to kill people at midnight, and it's like the way travel works, there's just no way you can get to a different place with a different time zone fast enough to kill someone in that different time zone on the hour of midnight every hour. So I mean,
that sounds amazing.
It's kind of ridiculous, and this guy's just calling people and he's like, my name is Eva. And that's the whole movie.
Oh, like, I gotta go.
I'd be like, I have caller ID and I already knew that.
And the fucking, like, his son in that movie, like, their kid, because he's, like, haunting his wife and shit, like, fucking with her and then other people. But, like, his kid is easily a bigger fucking freak than he is. Like, he's, like, he's supposed to be, like, a red herring, but, like, I don't think he's even a red herring. It's, like, he should be in jail.
Well, offspring.
Offspring, am I right?
Am I right?
But the most important part of 1980 was Sean S. Cunningham's Friday the 13th. I wish I could just like make the letters pop up like in front of your face right now. Friday the 13th basically followed the success of Halloween down to a T. The film made just about 70 million. Oh no, they The film made just about $60 million on a budget just shy of $600,000, and the cast included none other than Kevin fucking Bacon. Kevin
Your favorite. Bacon.
Your boy.
This is the reason Kevin Bacon is Kevin Bacon, I think.
Kevin Bacon listens to Morbid.
He does.
Or at least followed us on Instagram at one point in time. It was a cool moment.
So Kevin Bacon, cool I know moment. You're listening right now. Hey, Kevin Bacon.
Kev.
Kev.
Hey, Kev.
How's it going,
partner? How did you like the Albert Fish episode?
So it became the first independent slasher film to be bought out by a major studio, which was huge for the genre because that meant that slashers had cemented themselves in Hollywood.
Hollywood?
So Friday the 13th earned nearly $6 million in its opening weekend alone. For comparison, Stanley Kubrick's The Shining made $47 million on a $19 million budget in the same year. So this made like $13 million more dollars and on like a way smaller budget than The Shining.
Wow.
That's
wild.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Stop. Girl. Get out of here.
Friday the 13th is insanely iconic because what other franchise can say if they had 8 total films released in the 80s alone? Like,
that's insane.
Fucking insane, dude. That's basically like a new movie every single year.
Did they all do like relatively well?
If you looked at it on a graph, I mean, they spiked down like pretty much with
yeah, it makes sense.
Each of them for the most part. But I mean, Friday the 13th was an insanely profitable series. All of them were pretty fairly low budget. Well, yeah, they were all like really low budget.
That's just a fun franchise. It's got I mean, you can't go wrong with a summer camp. You just can't.
No, it's always immediately it puts you in like a certain kind of vibe.
Yeah, and it was fun that it started out with one killer and then it switches for the rest. So it kind of like trips everybody up.
It's honestly really insane that they were able to make that switch and
yeah,
that people weren't pissed and that it worked. I mean, like, we all saw what happened when Halloween 3 tried to go in a different direction and try to do like a anthology kind of thing with their movies and got rid of Michael Myers. People were pissed. It did not work. It flopped terribly.
We want Michael.
It's funny, too, that like Friday the 13th is known for Jason.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that it didn't start that way.
It is. I know. And like, I feel like Scream calls to that.
Yeah.
You know what I just realized? Friday the 13th. You're both dressed for slashers, but I'm not.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think of that either. Hey, you got Britney Spears.
I love how telling that is.
This is very much our brand.
Yeah, very much so.
So the whole Friday the 13th series, I mean, it just gets more and more ridiculous as it goes on. But it also, I feel like it gets more and more fun as it goes on. There was a time where I hated some of the more ridiculous ones. I was like, what the fuck is in Jason? When I was like a little dickhead horror movie fan. But now I'm like, you know what? Manhattan's a good movie. But Jason Goes to Hell, I mean, I'm still not there.
Freddy versus Jason
I was
where it's at.
I love Freddy versus Jason. I don't care. It has issues, but I love it. I love Jason X. Hell is the only one that I can't do. So even though Friday the 13th was originally a Halloween clone, I would say that after the release of Friday the 13th, everything was a Friday the 13th clone. Like, they weren't trying to replicate Halloween anymore. It was all Jason. Everyone was trying to get a big fucking buff-ass killer walking around slashing you up.
And walking around so slow.
A buff-ass killer.
Dude, what do you think Jason's dick looks like?
Massive.
I don't want to think about it.
You think it's deformed, too?
Really gross.
Do you think it has, like, sores on it?
No, I feel like it points to the left a little bit.
Okay, just a little bit to the left, but, like, it's, like, a nice, like...
I don't think any dick is a nice dick, to be honest with you, but I'm also, like, not into dicks, so...
Well, Jason, shout out. Shout out your dick.
I feel like it would look like a sweet potato.
Whoa, okay. Shit, Jason.
That's thick.
What you working with? Never gonna look at a sweet potato the same.
Like a yam.
Is there a difference?
I don't know.
Whenever I buy sweet potatoes,
you can buy interchangeably.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
They're the same thing.
It's so weird.
So slasher films in 1981 consisted of things like My Bloody Valentine, which wasn't a huge success. But what I find interesting is how Tom Savini was the mastermind behind the gore and kills in Friday the 13th, like the original one. But then after the original, he kind of really didn't want anything to do with the series, and he ended up doing a ton of slashers that weren't Friday the 13th, but were basically Friday the 13th, like The Prowler and The Burning.
I love Tom Savini, and I love his special effects. They are so outrageous.
Anytime you watch a movie, like especially in the 80s, that has effects by Tom Savini, you know it's going to be a great time.
100%.
I mean, he was definitely the master of his craft. And it's just, it was so weird because when people, I mean, it made sense too. It's what I kind of talked about a second ago. But when Tom Savini was first offered Friday the 13th Part 2, he was like, no, I'm going to go do this movie called The Burning. It was basically Friday the 13th, the same thing. It was another slasher like at a summer camp. But he didn't understand how Jason was going to grow up and become a killer. He was like, that doesn't make sense. Doesn't play out right in my head. I'm not doing this.
He's like, I don't think that's going to catch on, guys.
And I get it, too. When you think about it, you're like, he had did this movie and he's like, yeah, Jason was some scrawny little fucking kid with a big head that was like dead underwater. What do you mean?
Yeah, he's like, this isn't going to work. People aren't going to like it. It's not going to stick, guys. See you
meanwhile.
Later.
Meanwhile, he was very wrong. So we won't focus on the Prowler too much, but The Burning from 1981 focuses around the Cropsey killer, who was severely burned after a prank gone wrong. And Cropsey, are you guys familiar with him?
Oh, yeah. Yep. We watched a whole documentary we about did. Cropsey one yeah. time.
Cropsey was severely burned after a prank gone wrong. Not much need for an explanation regarding the motive for him going after people. A prank went wrong. He was severely burned.
He was pissed.
That's the motive.
That's fair.
Therein lies.
Yeah.
As for what goes on in the film, again, the effects are done by Tom Savini. It features actors who ended up being huge stars, like Jason Alexander, a.k.a. George Costanza from Seinfeld. Which
Seinfeld?
I literally just said Seinfeld.
Seinfeld.
But George Costanza, like, this is one of, I think, if not his first role.
That's crazy.
When you look at the picture of him in this movie, it does not fucking look like him. I didn't realize it was him until I looked it up after, and I had to really squint, and it was only like one specific picture at a certain angle, and I was like, oh shit, that is you. Because God, like, he...
Oh my God.
I'm going to go ahead and say, he did not age well. He looked a lot better when he was younger.
He was so young.
He was kind of handsome, George. Too, honestly.
He was a little handsome. Look at him.
He does not look like that now. Or on Seinfeld. He wasn't
like, compared to what?
I mean, yeah. What he looks like now is
relatively
different.
Here.
Yeah, he was about like 20 or younger in this role.
Yeah, like, is he my thing? No. But like, I get
but
it.
Like, yeah, but he wasn't a terrible looking dude, like, you know?
No, he wasn't.
So we also have Holly Hunter, who was Elastigirl from The Incredibles.
Oh, that's my girl.
So I watched it, and I found out after, first off, I had a really good time watching this movie. I think it's like an incredible, incredible slasher. But
this is a great movie. I saw this like a long time ago.
It's fucking good, dude. Like, it's really, really good. But I'm watching this, and after, like, I'm like probably about an hour in, and I go into like IMDb and start looking up some stuff, and I find out that it is one of the only two writing credits belonging to, Elena, do you know this?
No, I don't.
Harvey Weinstein.
Get the fuck out of here.
He wrote this. He's only wrote two things ever. This is the first movie he ever wrote. This is like the first like affiliation he has to movies, pretty much.
Oh my God, that's so sad and disappointing.
Wait, I'm sorry. I was still looking at pictures of George Costanza. What movie did he write?
The Burning.
Oh,
that's a bummer.
He was referenced in Sex and the City, like old episodes, and me and Drew are watching it, and we went, oh,
I know, it literally is like
so jarring.
I mean, the thing is, it's really hard to watch any kind of media that like isn't attached to Harvey Weinstein. I mean, he's produced so many movies. Like,
oh, that sucks.
And I do remember when I was watching it, I did see like Harvey Weinstein in the beginning of the movie, like during the credits and stuff. But you know, usually I just assume it's like, okay, it's a producing credit or something like that. You know, like you see
like
Harvey
that.
Weinstein produced by on like so many fucking movies right in the beginning. So I didn't really think anything of it. I wasn't looking at it. And then when I saw that he wrote this, and this was like the only movie he ever wrote, I was like, oh my God, this is insane.
That's insane. I would have never, ever guessed that.
It blew me away when I saw it. Like, I had to double check a few times and I had to actually go to his credits on his own. I'm like, wait, what did this?
You're like, is it the Harvey Weinstein?
Didn't Harvey Weinstein work on Scream too?
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah, I thought so. I meant like also.
Yeah.
Not like just
number
two.
Yeah, I knew what you meant. Yeah.
Ugh.
This was kind of the start of like their careers, Harvey Weinstein and Bob Weinstein, because Harvey Weinstein made the story for this. Bob Weinstein wrote it. I think someone else was involved writing it too, maybe a couple other people. But this also may have been the beginning of his sexual abuse crimes, because apparently he exposed himself to an intern during this movie. So how fucking ridiculous is this guy? Like, his first thing ever, like, I mean, he has a whole history, a whole like career of abusing women, obviously, but like, wow, trace back to the first thing that he ever did.
It makes sense. It's like, once a pig, always a pig.
Yeah.
And to know it started that early.
I know, because I wonder how old he was at that point in time.
I mean, shit, that was like 40-something years ago, 1981.
1981, I'll look up his birthday.
And that means it was like a year or two before that, too, when they were like shooting it, so. He was probably in his 20s.
He was 29.
Wow.
And since the movie was like shot before too, it was probably like 27, 28, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
Gross.
Oh, he's so gross.
A repulsive man, just a giant tub of fucking lard.
Truly, inside and out.
Looks like
truly.
A Cronenberg creature.
He really does.
Just... He looks like Belek.
Belial. Belek.
Belek.
He really just said
that's
Belek.
That's the sequel. That is the sequel right there.
Belial and Belek.
That's...
And then we have Bloody Birthday from 1981. It's a slasher film centered around three under the age of 10-year-old children who all share the same birthday and are just as much of a psychopath as the next. Honestly, fuck Children of the Corn. Go watch Bloody Birthday if you want to see some kids cause some fucking havoc. This movie is unnerving.
Really?
It sounds unnerving.
It is so good. I actually like really, really love it.
Now I want to watch it.
They all go on a spree of incredibly clever killings, for their age, that is, and no one suspects a thing because they're fucking kids. And one of them even hosts, like, a peephole party where she charges a quarter for 30 seconds of looking at her sister while she changes clothes. Like,
this, oh my god!
This 10-year-old is, like, a fucking crazy badass.
I want to watch this because, like, it just sounds insane.
And another one of the kids, he kind of looks like a fucking Ralphie from A Christmas Story, but he's just walking around with a fucking revolver the whole time just shooting people.
Holy shit!
It's a bloody great mess, and there's also a whole astrology thing regarding Debbie not having emotions because of her, lack of Saturn.
Her lack of Saturn.
Huh. Okay.
You know.
And huge honorable mentions to some of the great independents that were released this year, like Madhouse, Dead Kids, and of course, Halloween 2 and Friday the 13th Part 2, which, my favorite Jason. It worked, Tom Savini.
We love a Jason. Yeah, I really did like it. The second one is awesome.
I love Sackhead Jason. I kind of wish they stayed with it, but it's good that hockey face Jason is in the world, but, you know, I like Sackhead.
I haven't seen the second one.
I like that they both exist.
I started with the third one.
The third is a really good one, for sure.
I liked the third one a lot.
So 1982 was a year of continued sequels, including Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, a movie that, like we said, pissed people off, but it seems to have gained a pretty decent cult following ever since.
I love that one.
I love Tom Atkins, so...
I loved that one, for what it was.
It's honestly, like, the first time I saw it, I was like, fuck this. But then when I watched again, I actually, like, gave another chance. I was like, oh no, this is a really, really good movie.
This is really
good. I love when you do that.
But my favorite from 1982 would have to be Slumber Party Massacre. I mean, there's nothing better than a dude holding an obnoxiously large drill. It's like, you know how fucking heavy those things are just to be carrying around as your weapon?
Hell yeah. That's the most
also
inconvenient.
Terrifying. The most inconvenient, but does so much damage.
Yeah. Ask Denise Richards.
The one now?
Ask Denise Richards from Valentine.
I thought you said ask pediatricians. And I was like,
That's exactly what I thought she said.
I mean, yeah.
Okay. I'm glad that you said what? Because it sounded like you were going to the next thing. And I was like, okay.
And you're like, oh, we're just going to move on.
I was like, we had the same pediatrician and mine did not have a drill.
I also swallowed between ask and Denise. So maybe it made it sound weird.
Swallowed between ask and Denise, you say?
You may never see Denise Richards again.
So in 1983, we had Sleepaway Camp, which, by the way...
One of my favorites.
That's JP's favorite.
I was going to say, when are we getting JP in the building?
Oh, he's dying to come on.
He's ready and raring.
I miss JP.
Ready and raring?
He is.
Are you okay over there? Pediatricians, Denise Richards, raring.
Raring to go. That's a word.
Is it?
You know, yeah.
Raring?
I'm ready and raring to go.
Like when you're raring a steak.
Like I didn't make that up.
I mean, you know a lot of words, so I believe you.
I mean, you know a lot of words.
She does. She taught me the word kismet a few years ago.
Ooh. Ooh.
I'll never forget it.
She got so mad about it.
John agreed with me, though.
So we had Sleepaway Camp and our introduction to future Scream Queen, Felissa Rose, because, I mean, she's just in fucking everything nowadays. I remember a while ago for the Scream Patreon, I was watching, like, horror shorts, and I'm just watching a random short on YouTube, and all of a sudden Felissa Rose just pops up on the screen. I was like, wait, what are you doing here?
Like, what are you doing?
Like, she's just everywhere. I love her for that.
She's everywhere.
But something iconic also happened, and that was 1983's Psycho 2, which stars Anthony Perkins and Vera Miles from 1960's Psycho. Like, they came back together 23 years later.
Love that.
It's crazy. And it made $35 million at the box office. So, I mean, for not being around for 23 years, not too bad.
Pretty solid.
And finally, were about the end of the golden era in 1984. We had small films like The Mutilator, Silent Night, Deadly Night, a sequel to The Hills Have Eyes, which was generally hated. But 84 also spawned two new series, one universally mid and the other one universally loved. The first being Children of the Corn, which, I mean, Elena, me and you covered that for like... The second.
And universally loved.
Corn, all kinds of corn.
Asha, did you listen to our episode on that? We both watched it and we're like, I remember this movie being a lot better.
Literally.
Yeah. No, that's why I was saying that. I was kidding.
That's the general consensus, I think, is you're like, oh, hell yeah. When you go to watch it again, you're like, oh, let's do this. And then you watch it and you're like, yeah.
It's kind of a terrible movie.
For some
movie.
Reason, I feel like a lot of people see that like younger. Like a lot of horror fans are like, oh, that was like one of my first. So it's wicked scary when you're young. And then watching it as an adult, you're like, oh,
yeah,
not
really
so scary at all.
It really changes.
Just preventable.
It's just also one of those like, it's one of the only movies that you think of where you're like, oh, yeah, killer kids. Like, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just like true. You get like one good opening scene of kids being killer. And the rest of the time they're like, Malachi.
He who walks behind the rose. That first scene is great, though.
So the first was Children of the Corn, and the latter being Wes Craven's Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
So good. You know, Johnny Depp almost passed up the part.
Yeah, and it probably wouldn't have been a good decision.
Do you know who convinced him to take the part?
Me.
No, was it? Wait, I know this one. I don't remember this.
Nicolas Cage.
Oh, fuck.
That's amazing.
Isn't that so funny?
My next guess was Mark Hamill. I was fucking up.
That's amazing.
Nicolas Cage.
The first Nightmare on Elm Street is
Chef's
Kiss.
The first time that I ever saw Nightmare on Elm Street was at a drive-in, so I got like a real fucking experience.
A drive-in at a horror house.
At a horror house,
you say.
A horror house.
Are we saying horror?
We're saying horror.
I'm saying horror house.
Oh, no. No, I have never been to one of those. To my knowledge, at least.
It's on your bucket list. Also, by the way, does anyone have Screambox right now? Is anyone watching Freddy's Nightmares?
No, but I want to.
So for anyone that doesn't know, Screambox is doing this thing now. They're doing like a streaming service like everyone else. And on their streaming service, they have Freddy's Nightmares, which is really cool because it's never been on a streaming service before. It doesn't even have like any good DVD releases, so it's pretty much impossible to find. And finally, someone is streaming this, and they have there's like 44 episodes. I've been having such a fun time watching it.
Oh, shit, that sounds cool.
I gotta dive into it.
I mean, it's like just a million more Nightmare on Elm Street movies, basically. Like, there's so much. And Freddy's just going crazy. So in 1985 to 1989, we have direct-to-video slasher and indie movies, because the next few years was filled with more sequels, more independent, and more weird slashers. This is kind of like my fucking time. Texas Chainsaw 2, Slumber Party Massacre 2, Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, Blood Rage. All
Blood
the bangers.
Rave.
And don't forget the work of art that is workout movies. See what I did there? Work. Work. Killer Workout and Death Spa, which if you haven't seen them, there's so much Pilates.
Pilates will be a killer workout.
It is.
It's pretty killer, dude.
Have you ever done Pilates, Spa. Caleb? No.
I've never done it. No, I don't exercise. You've what the fuck
the
are you
daily
talking
double.
About?
It's intense.
It's a lot.
It's a killer.
Your abs will cry.
But the year of 1988 brought us Brad Dourif. It brought us Child's Play.
That's right, it did.
I've never seen Child's Play.
That was one of the first horror movies I saw.
By accident.
By accident at my grandparents' house. Thank you, JP. Way too young.
But Alina's horror origin story.
That's it.
But we all know about Child's Play, but what about Maniac Cop? Maniac Cop from 1988 is starring Tom Atkins as the main detective, Bruce Campbell as the red herring, and none other than Robert Zadar as the Maniac Cop.
I'm looking this up right now because I didn't even know about that one.
Oh, I do remember this one. Oh my God.
It's something else. It's a crazy movie. I mean, like, the way that Robert Zadar just throws people behind him and just, like, leaves his arms, like, stationary in air like a true performer is just, it's amazing.
I totally forgot about that movie. You are unlocking so many core memories right now in my life.
That's always the wildest feeling, too. You're like, oh,
yes.
Shit.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that if you've seen it, you'll probably remember it. If you look at the cover, just like Elena did right now, it's a great movie. There's a lot of playing with the food, you know, with the killer versus the victim, so to say. There's hilariously self-aware lines, a cameo appearance from Sam Raimi, because wherever you spot Bruce, you're likely to spot Raimi.
That's right.
It's just an all-around fun movie. 88, it just brought a lot of fun slashers. And then we get into 1990 to 1995, which is pre-Scream, which is pretty much when slasher was officially a dead genre. No one really cared anymore. There wasn't a lot coming out. All the ones that came out were kind of just boring to critics and the audience and etc. So the sequels to the big ones were still releasing. And then there was a super gay frat house movie called Pledge Night starring the frontman of Anthrax. It's...
What?
It's the gayest movie I've ever seen in my life. it's fucking hilarious. Like, it's probably the most fun I've ever had watching something. But wow.
They went in.
It's just like a giant fucking frat house, pledge house, and then Anthrax frontman is just running around and
That's what I'm picturing, just him running around.
I don't know why it exists, but it exists. And then we get stuff like Ron Howard's brother, Clint Howard, who played a creepy ice cream man in Ice Cream Man. But what we really got out of the earlier 90s was Tony Todd's Candyman and Warwick Davis's Leprechaun. And also, speaking of Leprechaun, quick little side note, I was just on the Horror Virgin podcast discussing Leprechaun. So if you guys want to check that out, go check that out.
Go check it out. Candyman is one of the scariest fucking movies of all time.
Oh my God.
Especially the original. There's just something
about that
movie. It freaked me out for like days after I watched it for the first time. It's so like grungy.
Yes, it has that vibe to it.
I'm gonna be scared tonight.
I first saw it in middle school, and someone who like, you know, knew that I liked horror movies was like, "Hey, have you ever seen like Candyman?" I was like, "No." They put it on. They were like, "Oh yeah, this is gonna like freak you out. It's like really good. This, that, blah blah." And I was like, "Yeah, I don't know." And then I watched it. I was like, "Holy shit, this movie is fucking crazy."
So
first thing
good.
I did when I moved in my apartment, took the fucking bathroom mirror off the wall.
That's right. You take that medicine cabinet down.
No tunnels up in here.
I remember the ice cream man, too, with Clint Howard there.
So funny.
I remember vividly because we used to have a Hollywood Video near our house, which I worked at. It was one of my first jobs. But before I worked there, I used to go down there with my mom and she would let me rent movies with my best friend. That's how we rented Children of the Corn, because we told her it was a fairy movie because she thought the sickle was a moon.
I love it. Kath is a queen.
She also accidentally let us rent Scream when it came out.
Love.
And I was like, I don't know how I got that one.
She watched it with you and she guessed
did.
The killers.
She guessed both the killers. But I remember I used to love the horror section. Like, I would just spend so much time there. So I was constantly looking at covers.
Mm-hmm.
So those covers always, like, trigger core memories in me. And that Ice Cream Man one, I remember every time I went, I would look at that cover. Because I was like, this man is the scariest looking man I've ever seen. And it was like that one picture where he's holding like two ice cream cones with severed heads on them.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's such a good cover. Like, you can't see that and not want to watch it. And also, Clint Howard just has the weirdest fucking face in the world.
My God.
Like, he just draws you in.
He was so scary in it.
And it's so weird looking at like Ron Howard and looking at Clint Howard because they are two polar opposites. But I love Clint Howard so much.
God,
like, he's one of my favorite like people in the horror community for sure. Clint, if you're listening.
That's the cover.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That's a lot. That's really creepy.
That's really creepy. That's
I was
going to
say scary and then I said creepy. Creepy.
Creepy.
So 1996 to 2000 is the Scream era. After Scream came out, there is a bunch of movies that tried to do what Scream did. This is when all the teen slashers started coming out. This is when we get the movies that are basically your bread and butter. I make the joke all the time that you guys only like movies that have like just four humans just like on a black background for like covers of movies. Like, all of those movies came from Scream. All those movies, there isn't a single one that Ashton Olanda doesn't like.
Hell yeah.
Accurate.
Yeah.
Except for maybe like Urban Legend, Bloody Mary.
Fuck
that movie.
Yeah, they can get fucked.
But it's a sequel, so it makes sense.
But you line up all the hot actors and actresses on the cover. You got me.
Oh, girl, let's go.
Soul Survivor, one of the most chaotic movies I've ever watched in my life.
Can we talk about how Matthew Lillard is not on the cover for the first Scream?
That always bothered me.
It is a problem.
I'm like, he is literally one of the killers. Like, what? And like one of the biggest people in the movie.
Yeah, and one of the best to look at.
Absolutely one of the best to look at. I think Matthew Lillard is like beyond.
I loved him when I was little.
I think he kind of looks like a Q-tip, but I still love him.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's a hot take.
That is a hot take.
I'm not saying he's ugly. I'm just saying he kind of looks like a Q-tip.
Yeah, nobody said Q-tips were ugly, so it's all relative. Q-tips are cute.
So we really don't need to spend a ton of time discussing Scream and what Scream did to the genre because, I mean, we've discussed it many times. But in the spirit of a recap, let's recap. Slashers were dead, but in 1996, Kevin Williamson wrote a screenplay, Wes Craven directed, and spawned a new era of modern slasher movies. And I would say that Scream inspired I Know What You Did Last Summer, and, well, I mean, it did, but it's also written by Kevin Williamson, so I guess he more inspired himself and then continued to inspire other things.
I love that. He just continues to inspire himself.
Oh, I need to watch that. You know, they're doing a TV show of I Know What You Did Last Summer now.
Yeah,
I don't
I've
want
watched
to talk
it.
About it. Have you? Yeah. Is it so horrific?
I mean, it's not good. I didn't finish it. I turned it off after like the third episode. I've heard it gets maybe better after the third, but like it really just, I don't get why it exists.
They did it with Scream. They did it with Scream 2, and I remember it not being super bad, but I also watched it when I was like in high school, so I think if I watched it
I
now,
hated it.
It
like
wouldn't
it.
Hold up.
I watched like the first two episodes, and I was like, I hate all of you.
I really liked it when I watched it in high school. I would have to revisit it to give you like a real opinion, but...
No, yeah, I like it. I was kind of a hater of it at first, but then when I rewatched it, I started liking it a lot more, and I kind of like, you know, they get to kind of like ground out the characters a little more, and you know, you get to like them a little more over the time, because it's a TV series, so you know, but...
Longer.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll watch it again, but I really hated it.
It was on Netflix for a bit.
Yeah, the first two seasons are very different. It's like a different Ghostface, and then the third one has like Ghostface back. I like both of them for what they are, honestly. Like, I don't love them, but I don't hate them. I like them.
All right.
And finally, the late 90s brought us a 1998 Psycho remake starring Vince Vaughn and Anne Heche's butthole. It's been mentioned already, but why do we need a shot-for-shot remake of a perfect movie? Why does Vince Vaughn need to be in it? Why do we need to see Anne Heche's butthole in it? Does she agree to have her butthole in it? I don't think so. Many unanswered questions.
Do you see her actual rectum hole?
Yes, you see her whole asshole.
The whole
butthole. Yes!
Have you seen it?
I have not.
I don't know if I believe you.
Dude,
it's
I can send you a
hole.
You could look up Anne Heche like butthole clip on YouTube, and I'm pretty sure it'll just pop. Or on, like,
I don't
I
know
think,
what that'll bring
yeah,
up.
Yeah, you look it up on Google, actually, I think, and you'll get like a link. Just look up like Anne Heche's butthole psycho, and it'll pop up.
I'm going to pass on that opportunity.
Just say Anne Heche butt psycho.
Yeah.
I'm going to pass
I'll
on the opportunity.
Just watch Psycho
I'll
then.
Sully
you'll see your
my
butthole.
Search history for you.
Just... Oh, yeah, like yours is so pure.
I know. I've just done Albert Fish, so.
So in 2001 to 2010... So 2001 wasn't the year remakes or horror remakes or reboots or anything like that began. But in 2001, we did get some really interesting stuff. I mean, reboots can be traced back to, like, we talked about in the found footage episode, but Alien Abduction Incident in Lake County was a remake of Dean Aliotto's found footage, The McPherson Tape. But, I mean, you know, he kind of remade his own movies, so I don't know if you want to count that. But, of course, we all know things like The Thing, The Fly, and The Blob. They're all 1980 horror remakes of movies from the 1950s. But 2001 brought us 13 Ghosts, starring Tony Shalhoub, Shannon Elizabeth, and Matthew Lillard.
Matthew Lillard!
Yo.
Great flick.
And while, again, this is far from the first, I feel like for me, this was when the remakes really started, like, popping up and were very apparent to me and, like, never stopped.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now we have millions of remakes and reboots of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We have a Friday the 13th reboot from 2009, Rob Zombie's Halloween reboots, a David Gordon Green Halloween trilogy, requel trilogy, remakes of Candyman, Leprechaun, Chucky, Hellraiser, Freddy Krueger, and nowadays basically any other big horror figure you can think of has a reboot or a reimagination of some kind.
Oh, the Nightmare on Elm Street one.
The worst piece of shit I've ever seen in my life.
I didn't see the remake.
It's an assault.
Just go watch Watchmen because Jackie Earle Haley is doing the exact same role.
Ugh.
But I mean, Watchmen's a good movie though, so you'll have fun watching Watchmen.
Okay. The remake, it was, oh.
So the remake / reboot train embarked on a long journey through the 2000s and especially around 2009, but has it ever really stopped? It seems like there's a new reboot announced every couple weeks. There's an entire subset of filmmakers dedicated to making mockbuster movies whose sole purpose are to bank on the names of other successful creative endeavors. And at this point, remakes and reboots are just as much of a horror subgenre as any other.
Yeah, that's very true, actually.
I feel like everything is just a remake now. Like, every movie that comes out, I'm like, that's a remake, that's a remake, that's a remake.
I mean, we've definitely ran out of creative ideas. We, meaning not me. I'm talking to you, Hollywood.
Honestly, I'm like, come on, guys.
That's like, that's why when they come out with scary movies like It Follows and stuff,
oh,
you're like,
yeah. Such a good movie.
Just use your noggin.
And what a good segue. What a good segue.
Hey-o.
So now in 2011, we have a lot of experimental and what I like to call A24 horror. We were introduced to movies like It Follows, directors like Jordan Peele, who released instant classics such as Get Out and Us.
Oh, so good. Fucking good.
And this era is very subjective because I can't tell you exactly what we're in now, especially regarding slasher movies. Like, I could tell you kind of where we are with horror movies in general right now. Like I said, there's a lot of reboots, there's a lot of artsy movies, but then there's a lot of mockbusters, there's a lot of everything. So, I mean, we are in that spot right now where we're really not going to know what define this era until, you know, 10 years down the line or something.
Remakes, I think you're right.
But also, like, remakes have been going on since, like I said, like the 2000s. So it's like I don't know if they really define any certain era. Like, I feel like they kind of do to an extent, but I feel like now is just a new subgenre of movies. Yeah, it's just a new thing that's happening now.
Yeah, I could see that. Speaking of, have you seen Fresh?
No.
I want to see it. Have you seen it advertised?
No.
It's a new movie. It's on Hulu. It looks like really good. I don't want to say like too much, but it looks good.
Is it a horror movie?
It's about like food?
Yeah. It's the one I showed you the preview for.
Is it like getting fresh with someone?
No, based on the preview, you can't really tell. It's like modern day. Like, this girl's like trying to find love on Tinder and some shit. And she meets this guy in a grocery store and she must go home with him at some point. And then everything gets weird from there. But like,
very trippy.
Yeah, super trippy. It looks interesting. I want to watch it.
And Sebastian Stan is in it.
I was trying to think of his name. I couldn't think of it. Thank you.
Interesting.
Looks pretty good.
So, recap, slasher started incredibly grounded with Psycho, and then John Carpenter made Halloween and unintentionally wrote out the layout for slasher movies for the rest of the 70s and early to mid 80s. And then a little while after Wes Craven's Nightmare on Elm Street, slashers started to get comical. Jason and Michael were no longer serious characters. Robert Englund's Freddy Krueger was contractually obligated to using the word bitch at least 17 times per film.
Honestly.
And just about every other series just went off the fucking rails. Things died down, slashers were less popular, and then our namesake, Scream, appeared. And before we know it, we get the teen-based horror movies like Urban Legend, I Know You Did Last Summer. This is when Sarah Michelle Gellar and Jennifer Love Hewitt were at the top of the horror world.
Hell yeah.
And really, that's a history of slasher movies. Like, we could obviously get way more in depth, we could go a lot more into a lot of this, but otherwise, if we did, this would be like a 5-hour episode, so...
And easily. You know what? We will.
We will eventually. We will come back to slashers.
Oh, yeah. We should do something like, you know, like decades or something.
Oh, for
that'd
sure.
be fun.
And for really sure. go into
go
them.
Like super deep dives into each one. I like that idea.
So, yeah, we could mention hundreds of more movies. We'd be here a long time. So we stuck to the important stuff. But if you want to be introduced to more slasher movies, I made a list on Letterboxd that you guys can go follow to check out these and many other slasher films and other horror themes list as well. It's all on Letterboxd at Horror Soup Caleb. Pretty much all the movies we discussed here and then other ones that I couldn't fit into the episode are over there. And I'll keep adding other stuff. So after all this, I'm sure we feel like we know a little more about slasher movies and have discovered at least one or two movies we weren't aware of previously. So with that, we can move into the next segment, which is the Instagram polls. So last time around, we put 24 found footage movies against each other in a bracket. We let our Instagram followers vote for a winner. And we did the same thing this time, but instead of individual movies, we put slasher franchises against each other because, like I said, there's so many fucking slasher movies. I think next time we do a slasher thing, I'm going to put individual movies, do a few brackets and whatnot, but for now, franchises just made more sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, for sure.
We want to know which series our audience is most drawn to. And just as last time, before I reveal the top 8, I have a confession to make. It's a little different from last time, because last time I just fully tricked you guys by adding, like, Cam, The Green Inferno, which weren't found footage movies, and then The Amityville Haunting. Like, that was just straight deception on my end. I just wanted to trick
Amazing.
You guys. It was hilarious. But this time, it's a little weird, because I added a movie that, personally, I would not consider a slasher, but I guess I get why it could be considered one, and I am very curious of what you guys and the audience has to say about this, but... Final Destination. Is it a slasher?
It
kind of follows some of the rules.
It's like, it's an offshoot of the slasher genre to me.
Yeah, I feel like it's like inspired by slashers and it has slasher homages and whatnot, and it's very much, it plays like a slasher, but I mean, to me,
but like death is the slasher.
Yeah, death is the slasher, but to me, I'm like, you need a physical killer in my eyes.
That's what I feel.
Yeah. I agree.
That's why I think it's like an offshoot. Like, it has the elements, it gives the vibe, but I need a physical killer.
Exactly. I like that it's a slasher that's not a slasher, you know, but would I put it in the category? No, I'd put it in like more like supernatural, if anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would too.
I feel like I would almost put it in the same category as It Follows.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, yeah, a little bit.
It's like a force is the killer.
Yeah, basically. So that's up to you guys whether you think it's a slasher or not, but I just want to say it's terribly disappointing how badly Child's Play lost to Final Destination, which is a series that I wouldn't even call a slasher.
Yeah, that was like, really interesting.
Child's Play is one of the best slashers of all time, and the fact that Final Destination beat it out, and I made it a point to write, what is your favorite slasher franchise in the
I
thing?
Love Final Destination.
And then Final Destination 1. So that really is just a disservice to the world. But you know what? It's what you guys wanted. So,
so there you go.
Gotta do what you gotta do, man.
So as always, I want to preface that this top eight list is not a one-stop shop kind of thing for all things horror. Our audience isn't the leading expert on horror movies. We're not the leading expert on horror movies. So please, I know a lot of people are passionate about which horror series is the best, especially when it comes to discussing slasher movies. So just know that people have different tastes, people like different movies, and these are the slasher movie franchises that our audience decided they enjoy the most. You can make your own list.
Make your own damn list.
Make your own fucking list.
But in the spirit of being a hater, I'll break the cherry before any listeners get a chance to, you know, say something. How the fuck did Leprechaun, Child's Play, Sleepaway Camp, and Psycho not even make it to the top eight? Psycho? Come
on. That's really wild.
The fact that Psycho did it is hilarious.
Come on.
In Sleepaway Camp? Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
So without further ado, this is the list. Number eight, I Know What You Did Last Summer, which...
Okay,
before I even move on, I just want to say, I'm okay with people liking I Know What You Did Last Summer as a slasher movie, but when we're talking about franchise,
thank you.
Not good franchise.
Let me lay this out for anyone who doesn't know. First off, a franchise means all of the movies with like that title, like sequels or whatnot. When it comes to I Know What You Did Last Summer, there's three of them. And the third one isn't even recognized as a movie.
No.
And the second one barely is.
I like the second more than the first, personally, so I feel like it goes back and forth. Dude, the first one's a piece of shit. Don't give me that face.
The first one's amazing.
I'm just surprised that you like the second one more than you like the first one.
The second one is a fun time.
The second one is at least fun. Like, it's funny. Like, they do ridiculous
like Jack
things.
Black
yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
They're aware of themselves in two, which they are not in the first.
They are very much aware of themselves.
Yeah.
So I just want to say that as a franchise, this being voted in as one of the best slasher franchises of all time.
It's fake as fuck.
That's fake and gay as fuck.
Like, fake as fuck. Will Benson.
Number seven, Final Destination. Number six, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which I will say, I love Texas Chainsaw. It's shit franchise.
It gets weird.
It's a real intense franchise. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 is just like its own... just galaxy.
Child's Play deserves at least that title. Like, I'd even swap like Texas Chainsaw over I Know What You Did Last Summer. I don't care at this point. I'm just a little disappointed, but it's fine. I'm not gonna interrupt again. Number five, Friday the 13th. Number four, Saw. Number three, Nightmare on Elm Street. Number two, Halloween. And number one, Scream.
Yeah, makes sense.
I go with that.
Scream, 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 scream.
So I will say I'm definitely opposed to this list. In my list out of the 16 movies, the only ones that we didn't mention so far are Hatchet, Candyman, Wrong Turn, and Fear Street. Those are the only ones that got like voted out that weren't really part of this conversation right now. I mean, personally, I'd go like Friday the 13th, number one, then Leprechaun, Child's Play, Nightmare on Elm Street, Scream, Psycho, Halloween, Sleepaway Camp. I'm not saying that those are just like the best of all time, but for me, those are my favorites.
That's your list.
That's just how you feel.
Yeah, Friday the 13th is automatically going to be top for me. I think that's the best slasher franchise of all time. That I won't argue. I think it's fucking amazing.
I think the Fear Streets should be in there.
I couldn't say they're the best of all time.
They're one of my favorites, at least.
I loved the Fear Street trilogy.
And if it was about single movies, too, like if we were going by like maybe the first and the first entries or thirds or something like that, too, my list would probably be like very, very different. But when I go by just franchises in total, just all the movies, I'm like, okay, yeah. You know?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'll probably get hate for not putting Halloween higher, but honestly, I really don't care about Halloween enough to make it one of my favorite slasher series, even though it no doubt like inspired a bunch of shit and it is a great series and I love a lot of the Halloween movies. I just like a lot of other ones a lot more.
I feel that.
But yeah, guys, that was our slasher episode. So I hope you guys learned some stuff. I hope you had some fun, you know, and then next up. And then next up, you guys get to vote on one of our slasher movies. You don't know who picked what, but you're going to vote on the slasher movies if you're on patreon.com/screampodcast, and you will get to decide which one we discuss fully next. Will it be Urban Legend? Will it be Rob Zombie's Halloween? Will it be Wrong Turn? Who knows?
Or will it be the slasher episode of Boy Meets World?
You never know. It's a gamble.
You never know.
So if you would like to fully prepare for the next episode, you're going to have to watch three movies. Wrong Turn, Urban Legend, and Rob Zombie's Halloween. And thank you so much to Ethan Hurt for making our intro music. You can find all of his stuff at www.ethanhurt.com or just find him at your local Texas Roadhouse. And thank you to Kyle Herman. Again, just search Kyle Herman on any, really any streaming platform. Search him on the Google, search him on the social medias. You'll find Kyle Herman. He made our outro music, which you will hear in a second. And make sure to check out all of our other podcasts. I host another podcast, another horror movie podcast specifically called Horror Soup, where I discuss a lot of old movies, B-movies, weird horror movies, strange things, and every single Amityville. And if you don't already know, Ash and Elena host Morbid, a true crime podcast, which is really just the best true crime podcast in the world. I already mentioned our voting on Patreon, but I would like to thank a couple Patreons real quick. Thank you so much to Megan Goodell. Thank you to Emily Lawrence. Thank you to Logan Young. Erica Baker, Christina Mahue, Mackenzie L, Gamer Mama 1973. Hell yeah, Gamer Mama 1973. Katie Stanton, Joko Soko, Willow, Madeline Overmeyer, Bailey Brown, Destiny Pearson, Jessica Roja, Stacy Durst, Nicole M. Gonzalez, Courtney, Catalina Graziano, Cassandra and Mike Rowe. I've seen you guys on the Horse Soup Patreon before. Thank you guys. Shout out. Elizabeth Anderson, Stephanie Leapley, Kyle Pendleton, Jack, oh my God, there's no way. Jack LaArchivesque. Jack LaArchivesque. That's a really cool last name, but oh my God, did I butcher that? Casey Polk, Callie Matthews, Samantha Ratana, Brooklyn Larimore, Daniela Lang, Isabel Collins, Jordan Elise Fish, Amber O, Cameron Jensen, Samantha Peters, Christine P, Kaylin Cotman, Sharkbait, Maddie Lalaberte, Evan Plock. Plock. that's cool. I like that. Paul Jordan. Cole R. Jen Williams, Isabella M, and Zach. I'm so sorry, Zach. Zach Cockerham. Cockerham, that's pretty funny. That's good stuff, dude. Thank you so much, everyone. You guys are all awesome. We appreciate you a ton. And if you guys want to follow us on all the social medias, we're on Instagram at Scream Podcast, on Twitter at The Scream Pod. Our website is www.thescreampodcast.com. And again, my letterbox is at Horror Soup Caleb. And this show is...
This show is some big-breasted girl going up the stairs when she should be going out the front door.
Oh, yeah,
it's
it
insulting.
Is.
This show is Omega Beta Zeta. This is Cece. I was going to say also, this show is What Are You Waiting For?
As Elena and Caleb, they met through some tweets. Exchange them digits, now life is so sweet. Zooming all the time to record new episodes. Slanging the jokes to make our heads all explode. On PCP, I'm trapped inside a VHS. Scream, baby, scream, you know who do it the best. Through Anna's eyes, the team is ready to go. Fighting round the world, shout out to Russell Crowe. Oh, space penis and endless corn. I've wanted the scream since the day I was born. Best friends ever, truly the greatest team. Eggs, 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 we just living the dream. Space penis and endless corn. I've wanted the scream since the day I was born. Best friends ever, truly the greatest team. Eggs, 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 we just living the dream. Internet homies, yeah, we tight like that. You wanna mess with Scream? Well, we might fight back. I'm still in that VHS, bad drug experience. A window that is secret, Johnny Depp, are you hearing this? We top notch, podcasting the day away. What you say? Friendship on full display. My penis is in space, if you think that is odd. I'm wishing for endless corn and eggs for the squad, Space penis and endless corn. I've wanted the Scream since the day I was born. Best friends ever, truly the greatest team. Eggs, 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 we just living the dream. Space penis and endless corn. I've wanted the Scream since the day I was born. Best friends ever, truly the greatest team. Eggs, 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 we just
is living the dream. Space penis and endless corn. I've wanted to scream since the day I was born. Best friends ever, truly the greatest team. Eggs, 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 we just living the dream. Space penis and endless corn. I've wanted to scream since the day I was born. Best friends ever, truly the greatest team. Eggs, 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 we just living the dream. Truly the greatest team. Eggs, 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 we just living the dream. Space penis and endless corn. I've wanted to scream since the day I was born. Best friends ever, truly the greatest team. Eggs, 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 we just living the dream.
If you like Scream, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run dark. In this new crime thriller, religion and crime collide when this small Montana community is rocked by a gruesome murder. As the town is whipped into a frenzy, everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager. But local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Lauro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. She and Ruth form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone's watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy Award nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook plunges listeners into the dark underbelly of a small town where the lines between truth and deception are blurred, and even the most devout are not who they seem. Chinook is available to listen to now exclusively with your Wondery Plus subscription. You can subscribe to Wondery Plus on the Wondery app, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify.